We're recording right now?
Yep.
809, Kinyan, Yoth, and Nakai.
People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by FoundItemClothing.com. Check out their Cthulhu slippers and cool cult film t-shirts. Edited and produced by D.B. Spitzer. Featuring Sarah Fee and D.B. Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. PGTTCM is part of the Dark Myths Network. Check out all the cool podcasts that we like at darkmyths.org. Subscribe where you subscribe, like where you like, rate where you rate. We recommend podbean.com and Apple Podcasts as well. Find PGTTCM on social media at PGTTCM and on YouTube at People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. If you want to donate, go to the Patreon button on pgttcm.podbean.com or paypal.me/pgttcm. All donations receive an on-air congratulations. Shop at pgttcm.threadless.com or pgttcm.com at the shop. PGTTCM is an exploration of the Cthulhu mythos, weird fiction, the gothic literary tradition, classic sci-fi, fantasy, and horror. Thank you. On with the show.
Thus was Panfilio de Zamacona y Núñez absorbed for 4 years into the life of the sinister city of Soth in the blue-litten netherworld of Kanyan. In all that he learned and saw and did is clearly not told in his manuscript, for a pious reticence overcame him when he began to write in his native Spanish tongue, and he dared not set down everything. Much he consistently viewed with repulsion, and many things he steadfastly refrained from seeing or doing or eating. The Mound. H.P. Lovecraft. Ever hear of the guy? And Zelia Bishop.
Bet you never heard of her.
Yeah, never heard of her.
Hey.
Which is probably too bad, because I think there should be more acknowledgement in this podcast about female writers in the mythos.
Yeah, that's why we're talking about Zelia Bishop.
Oh, I'm so excited.
We're not talking about Zelia Bishop right now.
Oh,
we've talked about Zelia Bishop. You just weren't on the show yet.
Well, then it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking about Zelia Bishop probably sometime in the future.
Ooh,
it's just
the future.
Yeah, it's just right now. We're just talking about an aspect of an element of something that was in a story that she wrote, and then H.P. Lovecraft is like, well, you hired me to fix it for you, so I'm just going to rewrite the whole damn thing.
Fix all of it.
Fix all of it. Put space monsters in it.
Yeah.
If it's like kind of like a action-y, like Oklahoma, Texas setting, that's Zelia Bishop.
If it's space monsters,
that's
H.P. Lovecraft.
So did Zelia Bishop write other stories besides these ones she co-wrote, unquote, with Lovecraft?
Yeah. She's not well known. I mean,
did she write a lot of westerns?
As I said, this isn't a Zelia Bishop episode, and I don't have that information in front of me.
All right. Well, let's talk about Kinyan, Yoth, and Nakai then.
Yeah. We're talking about some places where the old ones, the great old ones.
Oh, are these all cities?
These are all cities. These are places.
Realms, the netherworld of Kinyan.
Yeah. Okay. These are places where various folk hang out. Some of them are underneath Mount Vormeath Adreth. And others are underneath Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, you say?
Yeah.
Explains so much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I've actually been to Oklahoma too many times.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, both my parents are from there, so let's go see grandparents.
We can talk shit about Oklahoma. We don't have any listeners in Oklahoma.
Well, you know,
not true.
My family,
you guys are the best.
My family lives there. Actually, Oklahoma, much of their, it's actually a pretty cool place. Mm-hmm. It has some interesting history. And also, it has the, as of 3 years ago, the only federally funded preschool program.
And a lot of shitty alternative bands from the 90s.
Well, that's a good point. They just needed to get the fuck out of there. But I mean, I guess if you want to continue to produce like good music, there's a certain argument to be made about staying where your angst is from.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you stay in that artistic, you know, creative space.
But at the same time, if you just hang out in Oklahoma and do acid all the time, you're just going to be stagnant. And it's like, well, yeah, I can like film music videos in my backyard with naked people and rabbit costumes and disco balls. Mm-hmm. But if you're just doing that over and over again, so people are going to stop buying your
expanding.
People are going to stop buying your albums in around 2000
wanna,
something.
People want to experience celebrity through the things that they are fans of.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's a certain cachet in being a fan of something.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that's why people are like, I have the band shirt from before they were cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have the band shirt from before you thought they were cool.
That's right. Because they've always been this level of cool. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, what do I...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I am not going to say that I do not ever do that. Because I super do that.
You super do that.
With a lot of stuff. There's things that... Either I got into it really early on, mm-hmm. and I get irritated that other people get into it.
Yes.
It's like, you don't get it. You weren't there from the beginning.
Well,
you don't get the spirit, as Walter Benjamin talked about. You don't get the original. You don't understand it. And you know what? Here's the thing. With media, the way it is, everyone gets it. Well, everyone has the ability to get it. They may not have gotten the original spark, but...
There's certainly a different feeling when you find something that you love and that other people don't know about.
Sure.
Than when you find something that you love and everybody knows about it.
Mm-hmm. Fandom doesn't belong to anyone.
That's true.
Anyone is free to buy as much or as little.
Mm-hmm.
as they want about something.
Yeah.
It can be hyper-realistic. It can be a chibi version.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Don't let other people get upset and be like, you don't understand it. You weren't there from the beginning. You don't understand the rules.
No, that's just exclusionary. And the thing about it is that there are no rules in appreciating art,
no.
which is what we're talking about. We're talking about literature. We're talking about performance.
Sure.
We're talking about music. That's all art. That's all mm-hmm. art that humans make. And we can all appreciate it in it with its values, and we can all criticize it as well.
I personally, personal caveat, I personally think that classification of literary and art and stuff like that, to understand the classification, to know where it exists in time and space and what its contemporaries are, I think is really important to understand something. So when I'm like, that's not the Cthulhu mythos, that's the Lovecraft cycle, that's not Lovecraftian, that's just cosmic horror or weird fiction, that's why I'm doing it. I'm not trying to exclude people. I'm trying to get people to get excited about other stuff and not just focus on Lovecraft. I want people to focus mm-hmm. on Derleth. I want people to focus on Kuttner. I want people to focus on Clark Ashton Smith, uh-huh. Robert E. Howard,
yeah.
All these new great people that are coming out.
Well, those ones are none of them new.
No.
All the ones that are coming out now,
yeah.
too. I mean, you review a lot of anthologies of short stories.
Hey, Orrin Gray coming up. You should check that stuff out. That
yeah.
stuff's really good.
Yeah.
And also everything coming out of the HPLHS. It's really fun stuff. I mean, there's so much good stuff. There is so much cool, weird fiction, cosmic horror, classic horror, Lovecraftian horror,
mm-hmm.
all this stuff. There's just new stuff coming out all the time. I can only even review about, like, I'm going to say 2% of it.
Yeah.
It's just such a great, cosmic, wonderful thing. And it's such a vast thing, like a lot of other fandoms, that you can pick and choose what you like.
Yeah.
If you don't like the plush Cthulhu, move on.
That's true. That's a good point. Well put. Here I feel like in being an originalist and like saying like, I feel like in saying that you have to be there from the beginning or experience something from the original viewpoint
mm-hmm.
to be able to really understand
yeah.
it, that's really exclusionary because you can't really always do that. And I mean, like I said, it's a different experience, but that doesn't mean that it's any less valid.
Yeah.
And I feel like that particular exclusionary, like, I didn't experience it the way you did, therefore my experience is invalid or vice versa, is just,
mm-hmm.
like something that we need to get over as a species.
For sure.
Let's wrap it up. I'm getting a sign from a sound engineer. Okay, wait a minute. I'm the sound engineer. You can't tell me to wrap stuff up.
I can too.
Okay.
This is a collaboration.
I'm the one who edits this.
Yeah, well, you're the one who has to listen to you go on about it.
809. Kenyan, Yoth, and Nakai.
Kenyan is a fictional subterranean land in the Cthulhu mythos. The underground realm was first described in detail in H.P. Lovecraft's revision of Zelia Bishop's The Mound in 1940, in which it is discovered by the 16th century conquistador Zamacona. Lovecraft also mentions Kenyan in The Whisper in Darkness, 1930, and his revision of Hazel Heald's Out of Eons, 1935. The people of Kenyan are sometimes referred to as the Old Ones, because Lovecraft,
he had limited naming conventions.
Yeah, he had lost his thesaurus for a while. Also, that's so not true.
The other way that he did it was he would take all of the, you know, consonants out of a Scrabble game and then throw everything on the ground and add a pie. Kenyan is a blue-lit cavern beneath Oklahoma. It is inhabited by a human-like race that it resembled the Native Americans of the area, though they are actually extraterrestrials who arrived in prehistoric times. They are immortal and have powerful psionic abilities, including telepathy and the ability to dematerialize at will. They are also technologically advanced, using machines that employ principles of atomic energy, though they have largely abandoned their mechanized culture, finding it unfulfilling.
The most populous city is Sath, in the capital of Kenyan. It is named for Sathagwa, a deity once worshipped there, but later deprecated after the inhabitants found out the true nature of the god. Other deities include Shub-Niggurath, Nug and Yeb, and Gathanathoa and the Not to Be Named, which may be Narlethotep or Hastur. Not quite sure.
Hmm.
The two most important ones, however, are Tulu, Cthulhu, and Yig, the snake god. The denizens of Kenyan often place idols to these deities in near proximity, as in the following passage from The Mound. What's that?
So it's regular? Or?
Yeah.
In a pair of vast niches, one on each side, the monstrous nadir-encrusted images of Yig and Tulu squatted, glaring at each other across the passage as they had glared since the earliest youth of the human world.
In ancient times, the people of Kenyan traded with humans on the surface world. But when geological calamities caused the continents of Atlantis and Lemuria to sink into the oceans, the people of Kenyan sequestered themselves below ground, thereafter having no further dealings with the outer world.
When the denizens of Kenyan rejected their mechanistic lifestyle, they turned to a sort of socialistic aristocracy, controlled by a ruling class made highly superior through selective breeding and social evolution. Individual behavior is dictated more by established social norms than the rule of law. Although Kenyan attained great advances in art and science, its people have become increasingly hedonistic, decadent, and cruel. That's because they're practicing eugenics.
Yeah, I know.
It's awful.
I figure we'll talk about that
in the later banter. Okay.
The people of Kenyan also utilize undead slaves, reanimated from the bodies of ancient enemies or inferior members of the ruling class. They attained immortality and subjugated other races before them thanks to their technology and their ability to dematerialize and rematerialize at will. The underground people also customarily engage in several forms of sadism, depraved practices, ritualistic orgies, and unspeakable horrors such as extended public torture, random body modifications, and mutilations of other slave species as entertainment in order to gratify their time-dulled senses.
One other thing which endangered Zamacona's status in Sath was his persistent curiosity regarding the ultimate abyss of Nakai beneath Red Litten Yoth, whose existence the dominant religious cults of Kenyan were more and more inclined to deny. The Mound.
Despite their advanced technologies and mental power, the people of Kinyan usually dress in ancient fashion and are only equipped with melee weapons for their protection.
Yoth is a red-lit cavern beneath Kinyan. It was once inhabited by the Serpent Men who fled here to escape the destruction of Velusia. In Yoth, they built great cities, of which only ruins remain. Explorers from Kinyan visited Yoth frequently to learn more of the Serpent People's scientific lore.
The downfall of the Serpent People came when they brought up idols of Sathagwa from Nakai, abandoning their patron deity Yig to worship their new god. In retribution, Yig placed his curse upon them, forcing his few remaining worshippers to flee the caverns beneath Mount Vormith Adreth. Mount Vormith Adreth is a four-coned extinct volcano and the tallest peak in the Aglyphian Mountains. It is the dwelling place of various horrors.
Nakai is a lightless cavern below Yoth, though it may lie beneath Mount Vormith Adreth. It is the home of the great old one Sathagwa. Explorers from Kinyan meet with disaster when they first visit Nakai, encountering the deadly amorphous spawn of Sathagwa. Thereafter, entrances to Nakai were sealed off the mound. H.P. Lovecraft and Zelia Bishop.
So yeah, inhabitants of Nakai, they're gross.
Yeah, so are they humans? Is that the deal?
I believe they're like a pre-human settlement. Like they're like humanoid humans, kind of like what existed before. Okay, so
you mean like the Conan people, the Hyperboreans?
Well, we have like with Clark Ashton Smith's writings and Robert E. Howard's writings, mm-hmm. we have pre-human humans, or pre-human humanoids. The Hyperboreans, or Hyborians, or any of those mm-hmm. guys, Lemurians, whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of those were just, like, straight-up humans that then, like, when their islands sank,
they go
came
to
France.
Another place, and then...
They went to France.
Okay. Enough sarcasm. So,
So...
Yeah, I mean that's some gross stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, socialism should never be associated with that.
Well,
that's speaking as a socialist.
Yeah. But we also have to think about when and where this was written.
Right, that's true.
I mean, we have eugenics popping up into this because of the fact that it was
in 1930.
It was 1940. It was published in 1940.
So it was probably written in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Unless it was really fastly written. In the 1930s, of course, like, the Nazis hadn't been proven to be awful people yet.
No, but America was obsessed with eugenics.
Oh,
and genetic engineering.
That's a good point. Yes.
And selective breeding.
Well, not genetic engineering, but selective breeding.
Selective breeding.
And the idea of improving the species. So yeah, the people of Nakai, awful people.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that it's underneath Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that's geologically interesting about Oklahoma is
that
it's a very stable part of our continental shelf.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oklahoma, Kansas, Montana, all very stable. It's all that same, like, inner shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So it's far away from the upthrusting Rocky Mountains and the Pacific Rim, and it's just very stable. Yeah, and then North and South Dakota.
Yeah.
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 And Nebraska.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those plains states.
Yeah, I was going to say flyover states.
Well, that's another culturally dismissive way to talk about them for sure.
Well, okay, don't get off the train states.
I like that one better. Although, I think that this, like, game that you're designing where you drive across the first highway and it's the vast majority of the actual landmass of the United States.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I was saying is that those are all geologically very stable. So if there was going to be a long-term subterranean city,
uh-huh.
it would be there.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
What's interesting, of course, is that I don't think that those geological findings were available in the 1930s.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But then again, if you know anything about, plate tectonics wasn't even a theory back then.
Yeah. I don't really always want to be like, well, they didn't know about this back then, because I almost feel like it's like people dismissing, not quite to the degree of people dismissing Egyptians for not knowing how to make pyramids, because why would some brown people several thousand years ago know how to stack rocks?
Must have been aliens instead. I totally agree with you. I don't mean that like they didn't know about it. What I mean is that it's an interesting choice. There's lots of other stuff that's brought up in, as we've discussed, in the mythos that I'm like,
No.
The Earth is way older than that. So, how can we talk about human evolution like this, et cetera?
So much of the mythos is based off of science that was coming out at the time that was either speculative science at the time, junk science, junk history. And and some things weren't like discovered, but were in fact just theories at that time. And there's stuff that we could be like, well, did they know about that? We know that H.P. Lovecraft wasn't a scientist, but loved the crap out of pop science. And included that kind
of
stuff.
Well, and one of the things that's always included in like the cutting edge of science is the way that people talk about how that new idea fits into old ideas. So when you have an understanding of the universe where, you know, the Earth is the center of the universe, when you discover something like the sun goes around, like the Earth goes around the sun rather than vice versa, then what you need to do is figure out how this new idea fits in with all your old ideas about like human supremacy and God having a special place for us, etc. And like, so then, you know, then like, of course, nowadays we don't lock people in a tower forever, which is great, but like certainly old ideas are always being fitted into the new ideas when new ideas occur, new explanations. So like some of the stuff about like the age of the Earth being a lot older, it was hard for the people of the time to think about how the Earth was old, but there wasn't like self-conscious or sentient life on the planet before humans.
That we know of.
That's right, that we know of, right? So we don't have any, before humanoids, we don't have any scientific proof of that. But at the same time, like, so it's really difficult to think about that for people who are so, I mean, humans are just incredibly self-centered people, and human-centered and stuff. And so the explanation was that there was these other cultures that we just haven't found yet.
It's Jackson Elias.
What? Him? Why is he calling? Why now?
Jackson, how did you even find me here?
I'm an investigator, Hazel. I can find...
Well, you've got some nerve telephoning me tonight of all nights.
I know, and I'm sorry, but I've got to meet with you. It's happening. There. I'm here in New York.
You're here? What? No, I can't. Oh, it's out of line for you to even ask.
Oh, Hazel, it's nothing like that. Something serious is going on, and I need your help. Now!
I'm sorry, but who is this Jackson Elias?
Hazel's former beau.
He sent a telegram last week. I sense it's something that can't wait. Something bigger than all of this.
So, the other day, I was on social media, and I was going over the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society's page, I think on like Facebook or Twitter or something, and there was mention of Masks of Nyarlathotep. And I inquired whether or not it was anything like YoggSothoth.com's Masks of Nyarlathotep, which, you know, H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society, theirs is a dramatic reenactment of a campaign, while YoggSothoth.com was an actual play of the campaign. Not a play based on the campaign, but people playing the campaign. One of the first role-playing games I ever listened to on a podcast. Heck, one of the first podcasts I listened to and got interested in podcasts. And the person asked me, what are you talking about? And I said, could I get a review copy of Masks of Nyarlathotep to review on my podcast? And then, you know, explained who I was and why I would want such a thing. And I got a copy. I got a copy of it, which is really nice. I got a digital copy. No one tried to send me CDs that I then had to, like, try and find a CD player. I got a digital copy. And that's what I want to do in the future, digital copies. So, hey, if you want me to review something, send me some digital copies. I swear I will not put it on the dark web or sharing sites or whatever. I don't know how to do that kind of stuff. I know how to make a podcast. That's about it. Anyway, H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society Dark Adventure Radio Theater has come out with some really great fun stuff in the past that I've really enjoyed. It's been a great adaptation of H.P. Lovecraft stuff in the past, and it's always fun to have something to listen to when you're doing things, and they do a great job. They really do a great job creating these radio plays, creating these dramas, creating these, not dramas, but, you know, teledramas based off of the work of H.P. Lovecraft. And they're branching out of Lovecraft, thankfully, into original works and works based off of other things. And I really like it. It feels like the difference between, like, a community production versus, like, I don't know, regional theater. It's like, I feel like, and also, it's been a number of years since the HPLHS started Dark Adventure Radio Theater and producing these CDs and audio files. I have some originals kicking around the studio somewhere, but it's been a pleasure to listen to the HPLHS produce these things. I have everything from, like, Shuggoth on the Roof. I don't have everything in theirs, but I have all kinds of cool stuff. And this is my favorite project. This is my favorite thing that they've done. This is, I feel, surpasses the Call of Cthulhu movie. I mean, I'm sure they put more physical effort into it and everything, but quality-wise, I feel like this is the best thing that they've done, and it's amazing. I've listened to 90% of it on the bus today to work. I'm going to listen to the last 20-30 minutes of it, and I'm excited. I'm really excited. It's really cool to hear Sean and Andrew, and it's all the various voices I connect to faces from people that I've met from the HPLHS at the HPLFF, that's the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival in Portland, Oregon. And one of my favorite things that I like about the film festival in Portland is I always get to see a live reading of a past HPLHS Dark Adventure Radio Theater, and I love that stuff, and it's really, really, really good to get that. I don't know, this feels more like a live production than in the past, but it also feels more polished and just like you're there. And I really like it. I really like it. It's amazing story. It's a wonderful story. It's 6 discs from New York to Shanghai, Cairo, Kenya, a couple other places, London, and I'm missing one, I know. But it is so good. It's a very complex story, a lot of different characters, people come and go, just like a Call of Cthulhu game. And I don't know, you get worried for people, and you're like, oh, I hope they're okay. There's actually, I was skeptical. It's like, well, how do you do a story about a campaign? And everyone's experience is different, and how do you get kind of like a, they do it. And if you're familiar with Masks of Nyarlathotep, this is a wonderful story, and I hope they continue to do this. I would love to hear Horror on the Orient Express. I would love to hear Shadows of Yog-Sothoth, or, Tatters of the King, or any of the massive campaigns that Chaosium has by this. It is really good. I really like it a lot, and I can't recommend it any more than I already have. I'm going to get it again. I'm going to buy it officially, maybe see if I can't get a copy that comes with extra props or something, because this is such a good, fun time. And it's really good. In the past, I've, like, played stuff for people and been a little bit shy and weird about it because the fact that it's like a little too much weird fiction, and that's not everyone's thing, but this is like an adventure that doesn't, like, I don't know, isn't too like Lovecraftian, tongue-in-cheek. It's, there's jokes in there and there's references to things, but it doesn't hit you over the head with, like, I don't know, Cthulhu stuff. It just, it makes references. It feels mostly like an adventure, which is like what Masks of Nyarlathotep feels like. It feels like an adventure. And because it's not Lovecraft, it actually has a beginning, a middle, an end, females, people that aren't just, I don't know, 20-something, 30-something-year-old white New Englander males. I mean, it's good. It's not exclusionary, and it feels like you're there. Everything we've been talking about. So pick up Masks of Nyarlathotep by the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society. Go to Cthulhu Lives, I think is still their website. Check them out on Facebook, Twitter. It's awesome stuff. It's really awesome stuff. And check out their back catalog. Although this is the best thing that they've done, in my opinion, everything they've done in the past, I mean, is fun. Is fun. There's some stuff that I haven't been able to get into just because of the fact that I don't have a record player currently. But I've listened to it, and I've heard it, and I've enjoyed it, but I don't have a copy of it. Anyway, enough of me. Back to the show.
So, something I really wanted to talk about is what's been going on with the podcast, which is, you know, as people know, I had some surgery, and it's been the holidays and everything like that.
Yeah.
But we've also been having tons and tons and tons of readings.
Yes.
And that's something I'm going to continue to do.
It's really exciting. There's a huge back catalog. Well, back catalog, I say. There's a huge catalog of unexplored voice recordings of people reading these amazing stories from back in the day. And there's no reason we can't make them more available.
No, no. And I try and find people who I haven't heard of, people I have heard of, stuff that I think is going to tie into what I'm talking about. And sometimes just something that I think is good for the season, like coming up in February, you know what we're going to be talking about?
Yes.
What, do you want to spoil it?
Yes.
Okay, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about Dracula.
Yeah, and do you know...
Vampires in general.
One of the people we're going to be talking to about Dracula? My friend and yours, Kenneth A. Hite.
Yay!
Yeah.
He's a giant in the field.
Author of... Night's Darkest Eight. Oh man, I don't. Ken Hite writes.
Record,
he's a game designer. Yeah. I'm not gonna record this later. I'll fix it later though.
Okay.
But yeah, Ken Hite. You know
he's
him.
Amazing.
You love him. He knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the hosts of Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff. I think that's the name of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, no. So
well,
he's gonna
a regular attendee of the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and CthulhuCon in Portland.
Yeah, and also a resident expert on Blurry Photos, one of my favorite podcasts, who's also a member of Dark Myths
Collective.
Yeah,
which is what we're on.
Yes.
So. Like, this is going to be exciting. We don't do a lot of interviews, but we'd love to do more.
Yeah, we'd love to do more. And if you are a writer out there, this is just if you are a writer that has an actual published book through a publishing company, no self, you know, we're done with that. We're moving on from the self-published stuff. If you have stuff out there, you have a publisher, if you are a publisher, you know, talk to us, track us down. Go to pgttcm.com or pgttcm.podbean.com and contact us. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, even though I keep thinking about how I'm going to take us off of Facebook.
I know. I keep playing around with that idea, too, just because of everything.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, it's such an easy way to get a hold of people when you are like, should I even talk to this person?
Guess what? I look at stuff. People don't care about the Facebook. people subscribe. People find out from the show from other people and they subscribe to it.
Uh-huh.
Or people search for Cthulhu or horror or Lovecraft and find the show.
I wonder if they search for People's Guide and are like, ooh, Cthulhu Mythos.
Yeah,
that
people.
Sounds interesting.
People's
Let's
Guide.
Check that out.
People's Guide to Jamaica. Cthulhu? What's
ooh,
that?
Ooh, interesting. I was just looking for the People's Guide to Making Flan, but this one. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, no, we're going to keep those stories coming.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and it's great. It's like having Audible that you don't have to pay for, and it's
oftentimes
it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's yeah. Also, I just wanted to say that if you are a publisher or an author and you would like to have your book read, we are available for talking about that.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And if you would like to read for an upcoming story.
Oh, that would be fun.
Or if you have short stories that you would like to read,
yes,
contact us. Even though if you contact us about a short story that you wrote, you're going to have to record it yourself.
That's true.
All right. So I think we're going to wrap stuff up as we only have 6% on the battery. Uh-huh.
So stay squiggly.
Stay and don't forget to... No, let's try that again.
Okay. Stay squiggly.
And keep it weird. All right. Thanks again. And hopefully we'll be back sooner than later.
Yay.
Yay. All right. Bye.
Bye.
People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by FoundItemClothing.com. Check out their Cthulhu slippers and cool cult film t-shirts. Edited and produced by D.B. Spitzer. Featuring Sarah Fee and D.B. Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. PGTTCM is part of the Dark Mists Network. Check out all the cool podcasts that we like at darkmyths.org. Subscribe where you subscribe, like where you like, rate where you rate. We recommend podbean.com and Apple Podcasts as well. Find PGTTCM on social media at PGTTCM and on YouTube at People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. If you want to donate, go to the Patreon button on PGTTCM.podbean.com or paypal.me/PGTTCM. All donations receive an on-air congratulations. Shop at pgttcm.threadless.com or pgttcm.com at the shop. PGTTCM is an exploration of the Cthulhu mythos, weird fiction, the gothic literary tradition, classic sci-fi fantasy, and horror. Thank you.